Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of this show and have been the host of this show for almost 5 years now. And we have an exciting show today. We have Coach Paul Settles. Paul is going to join us from Claremont Mud Scripps. We're going to get an explanation on that school and how they survived and won the Division III Men's National Championship this year. Look forward to him coming on here shortly. I want to remind you that we have other shows that come on our UR Tennis Network on Tuesday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Standard Time is Lisa Goodman Stone's show, Parenting Aces. Tuesday following her at 2 o'clock Central Standard Time is Dr. Stephen Clark, Ph.D., and he just started this week, so we're excited to have him on board. We also have American Tennis with Coach Chuck Creasy, and Chuck broadcasts at 11 o'clock Wednesday morning. And then I come on at 1 o'clock Wednesday afternoon to talk about college tennis. And then Thursday we have the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association Perspective with John Denise. And John comes on at 4:30 Central Standard Time. For those of you that are interested in our network and think that you can talk tennis, we need you to talk for about an hour. We'd ask that you get in touch with me. And you can email me at jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. Again, that's jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. And we are always looking for new people to get involved with our network, and excited that Dr. Stephen Clark joined us, and he's put on a good show. If you missed it, you can catch the podcast and any of our podcasts on iTunes. You can just go there and look under the UR Tennis Network logo or page, and you'll find thousands now, after 5 years, thousands of interviews and of people in the tennis world. And that was our main goal when this all started, was to slowly but surely create a library of tennis interviews for people to listen to on a weekly basis. And we've done that, or are doing it, and excited that each week it continues to grow with hours of listening enjoyment. If you miss the show live, you can podcast it. That's the joy. If you're listening live, then you can call in today. And that number to call in today will be 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. Now, we've got big news here on the ITA Summer Circuit. The Summer Circuit starts this week, and seven regions will get underway to kick off the 2015 ITA Summer Circuit presented by the USTA. Tournaments will be held at Florida State, Laguna Niguel, Mary Washington, Minnesota, UMKC, and San Jose State, and Pittsburgh all start off the ITA Summer Circuit this weekend, and all 36 events will be played leading up to an ITA-USTA National Summer Championships will be hosted by the University, or Indiana University, from August 8th to 11th. And last summer, four different conferences were represented by the winners of the Summer Crowns, which is good to see. This summer event has been an event that allows the college tennis players to play other college tennis players during the summer and play players in their home region. And they can also travel as well, but a lot of them stay at home during the summer and kick off their fall training with some of these summer circuits that begin in each of the regions. So the other news that we've got out there, and this is news that Oracle's joined the ITA, and they're going to present their inaugural Oracle ITA Masters, which is the first of the National Collegiate Championships of the 2015-2016 season. These will invite 16 players on both the men's and women's side, and notable players that have already committed to the field are 2015 singles champion Ryan Shane, the USTA ITA National Indoor Collegiate Singles Champion Braden Schnurr, Danielle Collins of Virginia, and the Alabama back-to-back NCAA doubles champion duo of Maya Jensen and Aaron Rutliff. The tournament will be held September 18th through the 20th at the Malibu Racquet Club in Malibu, California. It will also, besides the 16 singles players, it will host eight of the most outstanding men's and women's doubles team, and they'll have consolation for each of these. Pepperdine University will be the university that hosts it, and excited to see some of the participants. I won't go through all the names of the people that are listed there. The thing that disappoints me most is there's no small colleges are represented in any of these, and I'm sure that there are some pretty good players in the small college world that could play at these Division I tournaments. It's just a shame that we don't see a little more interdivisional play as we go through some of these things and set this thing up. So maybe in the future that will be the case. So let me see here. I believe that I've got Coach Settles on the line. Let me see if I can bring him in. Hello, Coach Settles. Are you there?
Hey, Jason. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm having a good day today. A little bit warm here in Texas. How about for you out there in California?
Uncharacteristically humid here.
Wow. I guess you guys are experiencing Texas weather with the drought and everything that's been going on out there, huh?
Well, we got a couple showers the last day and a half, and we need it here badly. So we're not complaining.
Yeah, I can understand. One of those times where it's good to be a tennis coach when it's a drought because you don't have to worry about the weather, but everybody gets mad because you're the tennis coach and don't want the rain to come in. Is that the case?
That's exactly right. I'm actually at a tournament right now, and it's dry, so we're playing. But we hope that it rains overnight and we can help solve this drought issue.
Now, Paul, there are going to be some people that listen into this show that have no idea who you are or anything about Claremont Mud Scripts. We're going to talk about that as we go on through this, but could you just give us some biographical information on how you ended up there at Claremont Mud Scripts?
Yeah, sure. So I played Division I college tennis for the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, and graduated in 1987, went out and played a little bit of very, very low-level pro tennis for a summer, and then quickly decided to enroll in grad school and went to University of Cambridge in England, did a master's there. And then coming right out of that, I actually was very, very fortunate and got a job in the player services department of the ATP World Tour, and spent the next 13 years, actually 14 years of my career, working for the Men's Pro Tennis Tour based out of Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, but basically traveling around the world and following the tour. So had the very good fortune of kind of heading up the player side of the tour for at least my last 5 years with the tour. Traveled about 200 to 250 days a year, and I think that really laid the foundation for the coaching that I'm doing now. I got to be around the best players in the world, be around the best coaches in the world, really observe what they did day in and day out and learn from them. And then we got to a point in my personal life where we had three kids under the age of five at home. I was traveling about 200 days a year. And my wife and I decided, hey, there's got to be a better way to do this, this family thing. And the Claremont McKenna opportunity came available. It was a small college environment right near where I had grown up. I grew up in the LA area, played Southern California junior tennis, so I knew it really well. Interviewed with their staff on the back end of a 4-week trip that I took for the tour down to Asia back in 2003. Got offered the job on a leap of faith, decided to take it, and started my very first coaching gig in 2004 with Claremont Mudd-Scripps Colleges, near Los Angeles. And I've been there now, just finished my 12th year, and we've had a very nice run. We just won the national championship for Division III this past May. And our top player, Warren Wood, won the singles and doubles championships, becoming only the fifth player in Division III history in the last 40 years to win the triple crown of a Division III college tennis. So that's kind of the very short version of how I ended up there, and it's a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, and that's a great start, Paul, but I got to be real honest, and I follow small college tennis. I used to be a small college tennis coach, but your school has always fascinated me in the world of tennis. So before we get into the tennis and all that, I want to talk a little bit about the school. It's an interesting experience, and I've tried to have some D3 coaches explain this to me, but you're actually three schools in one. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there are five colleges that make up the Claremont colleges. There's Claremont McKenna College, Harvey Mudd College, Pomona College, Pitzer College, Scripps College, which is an all-female institution. And three of those colleges send their student-athlete into one athletic department, of which I'm a part of. CMS represents Claremont McKenna, Harvey Mudd, and Scripps. And then the other two, Pomona and Pitzer, send their student athletes into their athletic department. So you've got this very unique situation where students can actually enroll in classes at any of those five colleges and get full credit for them. It's even conceivable that you could be lab partners with somebody in the morning and then competing against them in a dual match in the afternoon, if you can believe that. So very, very unique. Each of the colleges have kind of their own flavor and their own identity. So it's a great place for somebody who wants really high-level athletics and the best of sort of a rigorous academic environment.
It's an interesting setup. I guess whenever you recruit – and you don't do a lot of recruiting there at D3, but when you recruit, do you recruit them to Claremont, to McKenna?
Just really depends on kind of the background of the student athlete. You know, Harvey Mudd is well known as one of the premier institutions for undergraduate engineering in the country. So we have prospective engineers and mathematicians and hard scientists who are very interested in Harvey Mudd. So those kids who approach us from those disciplines, we send that way. And then kids who are more interested in the traditional liberal arts with a specific emphasis in undergraduate business, government, public policy, international relations, those are better fits for Claremont McKenna College. So it's interesting. We recruit for two different institutions that are completely different, and yet when you get them on a tennis team together, it's this wonderful harmony of different interests that come together on the tennis court.
So, about how many students are involved in the programs over there?
So the the five colleges total about 5,500 students, and with CMS or Claremont Scripps, that's about 3,000 of those 5,500. So the other 2,500 roughly are Pomona Pitzer.
I see. And so you mentioned that several of the degrees that the kids come onto your campus for, what is the big draw outside of academics? You mentioned athletics to get into the school. Is that it, or are there other things that draw kids to the campuses?
There are lots of extracurriculars. I think CMS, certainly in the last decade, has become sort of one of those premier athletic institutions at the elite small college level. So I think this last year we finished in the top 10 in the Director's Cup, the all-sports trophy. So clearly, real athletics is a real strength and something that we certainly are very proud of. But, very strong music department at Scripps, theater, lots of different outlets and interests that one can pursue coming to a small college. And certainly the liberal arts education lends itself towards just a ton of different types of extracurricular activities. Plus, just being in Southern California, we have the mountains about 15 minutes away from us. We've got the beach an hour 15 away, so it's a very outdoor, activity-driven kind of campus.
Yeah. Now, you've had quite a few accomplishments since you've been there at CMS, and I want to mention that you've reached the team final appearances three straight years. And what I found amazing was, and I know this number was off because of this year included, was 85 consecutive conference match wins. So you've been doing a lot of good things in your time out there at Claremont Mud Scripps. But we brought you on, and I do this each year, each summer, to bring on these college coaches that win these national championships because it is unique and their stories need to be told. Let's talk a little bit about your team and talk about this fall schedule. Let's start with that. I noticed that you only play one event. Well, actually, two events if you qualify.
Yeah. Well, let me back up just to something you said a moment ago, and that was you mentioned the conference streak, and it's now up to 95 matches. It's okay. A decade without us losing a conference match, and I think that's one of the accomplishments I think I'm most proud of our program, because we're in a conference that is not only really strong academically, but incredibly strong athletically as well. I mean, in an 8-team conference, we have consistently five nationally ranked teams in the top 25, and at one point this year we had six in the ranking. So it's a really competitive league. With a lot of parity, and yet to keep that streak going has been something really, really special for us. As far as the calendar goes, yeah, the fall, we have a restricted fall. In Division III tennis, we have 19 weeks where the coach can be with the student athletes. We divide that between 3 weeks in the fall and 16 in the spring, because our weather is so good, we can start a little bit earlier in the winter. And in the fall, we really just have one event that is sanctioned by our conference as a team event, and that's the ITA regional event. And then for those who win the ITA singles event or ITA doubles event, they advance to small college nationals, which this last year was held in Sumter, South Carolina. And we were really fortunate to one of our players who played number six the previous year on the team that reached the NCAA finals in 2014 actually came out and kind of beat four or five really of the top players in the West to win that event in the fall and then advance to the small college nationals, where he finished fifth overall.
It is a great event. I'm excited to see that you do participate with the regionals and the small college championships. It's an event unlike any other out there in the United States. Would you agree with that?
The ICA event?
Yeah, the small college.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic to see, I think, what begins at the regional level nationally with about 8,000 student-athletes competing regionally. And then you get down to the small college national event, which is Division III, Division II, junior college, and NAIA, and the top eight in each of those divisions, top eight regional winners. And it's really a special event and exciting. And what the ITA has done with that event to create the Super Bowl of small colleges, where the winners of each of those different divisions come together and then play off of, essentially for the small college championship, is something, you know, unique in our sport. And then, of course, you know, you led your show talking about, hey, wouldn't it be great if the small college guys, the best of small college, got to compete with Division I? Well, that's the one opportunity during the year that happens. You know, the winner of that small college event actually gets a wild card into the fall indoor event, which has been held at Flushing the last few years, play with the big boys. So yeah, fantastic event, and we're fortunate to have it.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize that you only have a 3-week schedule there in the fall because of a 16-week spring schedule. So that lends yourself to a lot of matches in the spring. This spring was a little bit special, and I normally ask my coaches, was there a time during the fall that you started to notice that you might have some good kids and you might have a chance to make a run at the national title? For you, a little bit different here, because you have been on a run to the national title the last several years. So your philosophy heading into the spring, how do you start off your spring philosophy? Is it to build and get to the championships, or do you have certain other things that you're working on?
Yeah, I think with this team, because we had at least five players returning from our 2014 NCAA finalist team, and we had four players from the 2013 NCAA finalist team. It was a different mindset. It was a mindset of a group of guys who had been there before, knew what it was like the last few days of the season, and their focus was, you know, let's stay healthy, let's continue to improve throughout the spring, get better and better, and just stay focused on the prize. And you know, I think that really, really helped us down the stretch, because we had some guys who weren't going to get nervous in the big moment because they had been there, you know, most of them two times before, and were just really focused on it. So, you know, as I said, my big thing was, hey, how do we keep everybody healthy, and how do we just look to sort of improve incrementally every single day? I often tell my guys it's a race from January or February to May to see which teams can improve the fastest. And oftentimes we'll see teams early in the season who are ranked at the very top in our division, and the match will be completely different 2 months later. And I think in many ways that's a reflection of, you know, who's worked harder, who's improved faster, and so that's a really important thing for us.
Yeah, you had a very successful season that spring, or I'm assuming that it was all spring, 32-2, with a great streak of 11 in a row there. You were 19-0 at home. That is a pretty successful season, I would say. How did you go about getting 32 matches in your 16 weeks?
Well, a couple things. You know, I go out and I think most of the top D3 programs now go out with a pretty aggressive mindset as to how to schedule, and we're looking to play a lot of doubleheaders, especially for those teams, you know, in these non-scholarship programs that have bigger roster size. Now I had 11 on my roster this year. In the past, I've had, you know, as many as 16. on a roster. So I'm looking to get everybody out there playing. And as a result, you know, in February and March, we're playing as many doubleheaders as we can just to get everybody playing. That's one reason the number gets up there. The other reason the number gets up there is our conference tournament matches, of which we play three, don't count as part of those weeks. So that's beyond or at the end of that 16 weeks. But then when you add up five NCAA matches at the end, that'll bump that number up.
Yeah. And Coach, we've got a caller here on the line. I'm going to see if that caller has a question for us today, so just hold on. Hello, caller, are you there? Hello, are you there? Well, it must be someone that's just listening in today. 32-2 for the season. Your only losses came to two non-Division III opponents. You lost to Penn 6-1 and Azusa Pacific 5-4. Penn's got to be a good program to have on the schedule, being a Division I. Do you get a lot of interdivisional play, Paul?
We try to. You know, we're limited to 20 competitive dates. So that sort of limits how much interdivisional play we can do. But I love getting a handful if we can, and at least two or three. And we've been very fortunate the last couple of years to play some great D1 competition. This past year, we went east and had the good fortune to play both Georgetown and Penn in a doubleheader in Philly. Penn was a special one for me because I captained that team back in the late 80s. So it was a homecoming of sorts for me. Would have been nice with a little better result, but we lost to a very strong team. We did get to beat Georgetown and played really well, so getting a D1 win is always nice. The year before, in 2013, we actually were contacted by UCLA to play them in mid-March. Yeah. And you'll remember that team with Marcos Duran and Clay Thompson at 1-2, and then Mackie McDonald playing 3. I mean, very, very strong team that ultimately finished third at the end of the year. And although we lost 4-0, we had set points in two different singles matches and actually played them very, very close. And that was a really special moment for our guys and really sort of inspired the rest of the season for us.
Yeah, and I really don't think that people understand the small college, the power of small college players is that these players are good enough to compete at the Division I level. Just sometimes they choose a little different route here to get to where they want to get with their degree. And that seems to be the case in a lot of these Division III programs.
Yeah, and Jason, I think that's changing rapidly. I think it's becoming much more transparent about the level. I think Universal Tennis Rating has done so much in the last year to bring that sort of parity to the forefront. And, I can remember when we played Penn, Josh Pompan, who plays three on that team, or played three at that team, his father is an old friend of mine, came up to me before the match and said, hey, you know, if you look at the Universal Tennis Rating for both these teams, they're identical. They're absolutely identical. This match should be a dead heat. Unfortunately, he was wrong. But it actually was a very close match. I mean, it was 6-1, but we had match points in one match, and we were very close in some others that we lost. And I think that's what we're going to see with Universal Tennis Rating kind of taking off here. You're going to see how good I think the top small college levels are relative to Division I, and you're going to that parity is going to be exposed.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I'm a big proponent of the Universal Tennis Rating, and I think that it's only going to help college tennis more and more as you go along. And I have always been a big supporter of the small college tennis, and when you can get these guys and girls some recognition for their wins, and even their close matches, then I think it helps out everyone in the long run.
Absolutely, absolutely, and you know, as a recruiting tool and a way to chart progress among your players. There's just so much utility in it, and as college coaches, we love it.
Yeah. Now, your season schedule here, full of, when you look at the results, full of wins, 8-1, 7-2, 9-0. Just to remind our listeners, you guys play a nine-point dual match, 3 points for the doubles and 6 points for the singles. Do you play 8-game pro sets for your doubles, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought up format because your listeners may or may not know it's different at almost every level of college tennis. So you're right, Jason. We play 3 doubles followed by 6 singles. We play 8-game pro set with a tiebreak at 8-all in the doubles. We play regular scoring the whole way through. We only would play a match tiebreak for the third set in the singles if the dual match is already decided with a winner. And in many cases, among our division, we'll play a full third set even if the match is decided, just because we feel like that's a more educational way to play tennis. So there's a lot of talk about format, certainly at the Division I level. There's a lot of, I think, format fatigue right now. But at the Division III level, I think we're playing as close to the real thing as you can get. And I think most of us really. That said, you know, I personally I'd be in favor of one system for college tennis. I think it's really hard for our stakeholders in the officiating world and our stakeholders in the recruiting world to really follow all the different nuances between the division, the different levels of college tennis and their format differences. So I'd be a proponent at some point when we get through this format fatigue of, hey, let's make college tennis played one way, even if some of us have to make some sacrifices, just so that everybody understands it.
Yeah. Well, the thing I enjoy most about your schedule is these matches that you play go all out. I mean, they're 7-2, 6-3. There are 9 total points played. When you look at a Division I schedule, you may get 4-0 and know that match didn't play out till its finish. You guys play a lot of tennis for your players on the teams.
We do. You're exactly right. I mean, you know, just looking back at our top starting 6 singles players, I mean, most of those guys ended up playing over 40 singles matches during the year between, you know, tournaments and dual matches. They were, you know, somewhere between 30 and 40, with a couple of them, our guys who went deep in NCAAs, above 40. And I think that's great. I mean, if we were to flash back to, you know, 25 years ago, when I was playing college tennis, and there weren't sort of the restrictions on the number of dual matches, most of the top collegiate programs, guys were playing, you know, 40, 50 matches a year. And I think as a developmental tool, there's nothing better than getting out there and playing matches. So I love that. On the flip side of that, you know, when we get to NCAAs and the NCAA says, all right, well, you've got to play to decision, not completion, and there are very good reasons for doing that. You don't want players getting hurt after the match is decided. It's a little bit worrying on the coaching side, just in that, you know, for your players who might play a little bit slower, you could play a couple weeks of NCAA tournament matches with a few of your guys not finishing a match, and then if you have to put them in a situation where they do have to finish a match, how they're going to respond in sort of the match toughness area. And that's the concern. so. And it, you know, for those who kind of followed our progress during the NCAA tournament, you know, the ones who were winning our singles matches were our guys who played quickly, and the guys who didn't finish were the ones who played slowly. Fortunately for us, you know, we won the final relatively decisively, but had we gotten in sort of a ninth match, you know, a four-all situation, and had to have a guy play who hadn't completed a match in 2 weeks, that would make me a little bit nervous.
Sure. Sure. When we look at the scores, it seems like the doubles is a very important part of your philosophy there. Is that true, Paul?
It is. It's just a reality of our format in Division III. We start with doubles. Everybody you send out to the court results in either a one for you or a one for the other team. So we spend a lot of time, and I think most college coaches really enjoy coaching doubles because there's not so much of an emphasis on it in junior tennis. So we get some players who are raw and who have great raw skills, but just need refining and direction and work with tactics. So it's an area where we can see a ton of improvement. So we spend the time, we do a lot of work on doubles. And our guys have a lot of fun playing it, and I think we ended up only losing, being behind in doubles maybe three times the entire year, and to have that advantage going into the singles is just a huge bonus. And in the NCAA championship match, it made all the difference. We got up 2-0 pretty quickly at one and two doubles. We were down three breaks at number three, 7-3. And came back to win 9-7 and sweep the doubles. And when you're up 3-0 in an NCAA championship match after doubles, that's an awfully big mountain to climb. Doesn't matter how good you are. And we played a really good team in Middlebury.
Well, Coach, when you got to nationals, you had some tough matches coming in. You play in a conference. Can you tell us which conference you play in?
Yeah, so our conference is called the Southern California Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. The acronym for that is SCIAC, so SCIAC. And as I said earlier in the show, you know, it's a collection of largely very academic small colleges who also happen to be very strong athletically, based in the Los Angeles area. I think the furthest distance from one institution to the other is maybe 90 miles, but most are within 20 miles of one another. So it's a terrific conference to play in because the competition's good and the proximity is so close that you're not making these long van rides just to get your conference matches in.
Now, do you guys play each other in the conference and then play, again, a conference tournament at the end of the year?
Yeah, so eight teams in men's tennis. So everybody plays everybody during the regular season. So there's seven matches there. And then based on the finish during the regular season, they seed the conference tournament that way. All eight teams enter the conference tournament. Yeah, in many ways, like NCAA college basketball, and then we play, play those eight teams out of the conference tournament to place. So by the end, you have one through eight decided, and those are kind of the ten conference matches you play during the year. We got two additional matches against conference foes. Mona Pitzer, our next door neighbor. Was for most of the year ranked in the top five nationally. So we ended up playing them in the NCAA regionals, and we also ended up playing them in the final of a dual match tournament that we hosted at the beginning of March. So we ended up playing our rivals four times this year.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about your rivals. I'm glad you answered that. It seems like after the loss to Azusa Pacific that you guys got back on track there. put together a nice streak, won the conference tournament pretty handily. You beat your rival 7-2. When you get out to the NCAA championship, are these some of these schools, some that you've seen, some that you've played? Do you hear about these schools? How does it work for you getting into the NCAA championship?
Yeah, so, at the Division III level, and I'll just kind of summarize it, but, each of the conferences that sponsor six or more men's tennis programs have what's called an automatic qualifier or an AQ. So there's about 38, 39 automatic qualifiers in Division III that make up this NCAA tournament. And then they have some at-large bids, sort of the best of the rest, of which there are only five or six spots. So you see some second-place teams, even in some cases some third-place teams from some very strong conferences. They will qualify. And then there's some independents that they choose from. So schools that aren't attached to a conference or are attached to a conference that sponsors fewer than six teams in tennis will qualify as independents. That gets us to a draw of about 46 or 47 teams. The NCAA then seeds from there and then creates regionals based, again, on proximity. And that's kind of where the Division III model kind of breaks down a little bit, in that in an effort to be good stewards and frugal with the money, you'll often see some very highly ranked teams in the same regional. And that's what happened with us this year, and has happened in our region quite a few times in the past. So this year you had the number one and the number four trying to break out to be one of the last eight teams going to Cincinnati for the Final Eight, or the Elite Eight. And that's how we ended up playing Pomona Pitzer for what turned out to be a fourth time.
I see. And so you took your team out to the championships there, as you mentioned, in Mason, Ohio. Coach, you were riding a pretty good run. Was there one of those dual matches in the season leading up to this got that good chance to win?
I think there were probably three really important matches in that lead up to Mason, and two were losses. You know, you said that we were 32-2 on the season. I think the loss to Penn, at the time was the 60th ranked team in Division I, was sort of a wake-up call for our guys. Kind of like, all right, you think you're good? Well, we just lost to the 60th best Division I team in the country. So maybe we ought to sort of reset here, rededicate ourselves, and remember that, yes, we're good, but there are some teams that are at a different level than us. So I thought that was important for sort of recalibrating and refocusing us. The next loss, as you mentioned, was the loss to Azusa Pacific, which was a match we were up 4-3 in and had some chances in deciding sets in the last two matches that were on court. It was an emotional match. It was a fiery, very energetic match, and a real tough one for us to lose. But at the same time, I recognized that, hey, these are the kind of matches that are going to make us tougher in another month. So they're really important for us to play. And I thought, hey, if we lose one of these, it might just kind of redouble our efforts and make us that much better. And the third test was against Vanguard University about 2 weeks later. I think it was our last dual match of the year before our conference tournament. And Vanguard was a program that was ranked, I think, as high as 2 or 3 in NAIA, and had beaten us in the past. Very strong international players, real, real good team, and we came out with purpose and focus in a midweek match and clobbered them. And I think that was kind of the moment where I thought that this team could win it all.
Yeah, now you went three out of the five matches at your national team championship, you went 5-0 on. Did you start out, I guess, with the three quick doubles points and then finished it off with the singles real quickly there, right, Paul?
That's right, yeah. Again, doubles just being huge at the Division III level. And, you know, the dynamic's completely different. You get to NCAAs and you really almost, for us Division III teams, we have to kind of retrain our players about how to think out there. During the regular season, you know, you're finishing every match, unlike Division I, so you're really not so worried about what's happening around you. You get to NCAAs, and you got 3 points after the doubles or 2 points after the doubles, and I think everybody, whether they want to or not, starts doing the math and starts thinking, all right, well, if we get two more or we get three more, this thing's over. You try as much as you can to sort of stay on your court and stay focused, but it's difficult when you hear the crowd and players around you reacting not to look over and see what's happening on the scoreboard. And it's a tricky one to navigate at times. So you can have two guys finish real quickly and the other four are in the middle of their matches and just abandoning. And it's a completely different feel in the regular season. So, again, we really put all of our focus into the doubles and knew that our single strength and depth would help kind of punctuate our efforts, but I think it really paid off. We were a great doubles team in probably every dual match we played at NCAAs but for one, and it made a difference.
You mentioned that Pomona Pitzer is your rival within your conference. Have you started to develop some rivals at the national event too, Coach?
Oh yeah. I think you asked earlier about, hey, do you end up seeing any of these teams at NCAAs that you will have seen during the season? And the answer is yes. Most of the top schools in the country, if not all of them now, are making the trip west to Southern California for their spring breaks in late February and during the first 3 weeks in March, because the weather's great and the competition's there. So we end up kind of hosting most of the top programs in the country and playing against most of the top programs in the country during that time. And then there's a good chance we'll run into one or two or more of them again in the NCAA tournament in May. As was the case this year, we ended up seeing Middlebury during the year, who we beat in the NCAA championship. They were a repeat. Johns Hopkins, who we beat in the quarterfinals, we had played back in Baltimore in our spring trip back east. We saw a few of the teams that we had played during the year, even Wash U, who we'd beaten in the semis, we had hosted at our place in early March as well.
Yeah, so when you make it into the quarterfinals, then the semifinals, so with the two tough wins there, 5-3 over Johns Hopkins and 5-2 over Washington University at St. Louis, I can remember back in my days at the community college level that each match grew with importance. The players knew that and knew that we were getting closer to what one of our goals were. I mean, with being in the finals 3 years in a row, I mean, were your kids pretty hungry to get to that last championship match there, Coach?
Yeah, you know, I think hungry is a great word to describe it. As I said earlier, I don't think they were nervous. I really feel like they were confident and poised going into each of those matches. And you know, in the quarterfinals, we got down 2-1 to Johns Hopkins after the doubles, and that had only happened two other times the entire year. So kind of a different feel in a high stakes match, and yet, on the break, the guys settled themselves, calmed down, went out and played great singles and took care of business. And I think kind of dodging that bullet, if you will, in the quarters kind of laid the foundation for the semis and finals, where when we did get the leads after doubles, we felt like, hey, we're in a great position. There's no reason to panic here. Let's be calm. Let's be poised. Let's be confident. And as I said earlier, you know, since three or four of our guys in the starting lineup had done this trick two other times before, it wasn't new territory for them. They were in a comfortable position.
And I got to ask, did you get a Gatorade bath at the end of that championship there, Coach?
Gosh, you know, I can't even really remember. I don't think I did. It was such a whirlwind. It really happened quickly, where it looked like and you've probably coached in a few dual matches like this, where it looks like, all right, we might have another hour to play, and then all of a sudden something turns, and then all of a sudden it's, oh man, we might only have 5 minutes to play. It happened quickly. And about all I remember after congratulating our guy at six, Glenn Hull, who had clinched the match for us and given a few guys hugs, my athletic director was out on court with me, and he handed me a phone, and I was FaceTiming with our college president, who was hosting a college retreat. So I vaguely remember about a two-minute kind of FaceTime conversation with him, and I think maybe with the electronic device in my hand, the guys in the team kind of took pity on me.
Well, Coach, I got to ask a couple of other questions here before I let you go today. Your coaching philosophy, where does it come from?
I've had some great mentors, and I guess I would say my coaching philosophy really continues to evolve. You know, I'm still really feel like I'm a new coach, even though I've been doing it for 12 years now. I still feel like I have so much more to learn, and I'm trying to pick the brains of those who I feel like have done it successfully. You know, one of the big reasons for me getting into coaching, I think there were three guys who were instrumental in this. Marty Davis, who's now at UC Santa Barbara, was a key instigator. We had worked together at the ATP Tour for several years, and he made the transition to college coaching, and he strongly encouraged me to do it, so I leaned on him. Brian Gottfried, who I also worked with at the ATP Tour, and was just a phenomenal and still is a phenomenal player and coach, just taught me a lot about how to think in terms of tactics and strategy, and also how to conduct oneself. So I think he was a huge influence. And then Sean Sloan, who's at Haverford College in Pennsylvania, was another one who I'd worked with out on the HP Tour. He was in a referee capacity at tournaments, still a referee at the Hall of Fame in Newport, Rhode Island. And he was another one who really encouraged me to get into the college coaching. And, you know, I'd say generally if I had to summarize my philosophy, it's really just about trying to learn life lessons between the age of 18 and 22 and kind of helping to mold young men just to become character-first guys, and in the process really learning about themselves and learning how to win. There's certainly some technical aspect to that, but more of my philosophy is thinking about ways to win.
Coach, I got to ask, do you have an emphasis here? There are two ways to look at tennis, college tennis in particular, being a team sport with individual opportunities, or is it an individual sport with team opportunity?
Wow. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I think I'd probably approach it with your first description. And I think that's a shift for most junior players. I think, you know, most junior players come in thinking that, hey, I've played individual tennis even on a high school team, but through USGA high school tennis, I think they come in as individual players who are thrust onto a team, but we really take a team approach, and we talk a lot about the ripple effect and how, you know, what affects one player on this collection of 11 or 12 guys impacts everybody. So there's a great focus on team, and then after that, we try to celebrate individual accomplishments, but we're really just focused on supporting one another and, helping out the rest of the group.
Coach, you've got lots of help. You have three assistant coaches. Is this some of the things that allow your teams to be successful? They've got a lot of eyes looking on them, being driven in the same way?
You're exactly right. I mean, you know, one of the key guys you're seeing there in our assistant coaching staff is Hank Krieger. You know, he was my predecessor for 23 years. Since I've been here, and he's been a mentor. He's been at just about every practice and every match, and just is a great compliment to everything that I'm trying to do with our guys. So he's been a huge impact. Chris Fabrizio, I've had for the last 3 years, and if we lose a regular season dual match, I'm not sure what Chris is going to do. As long as he's been with the program, he hasn't seen us lose too much, and I think he's a big reason why we've been so successful. He's just a really positive guy. Again, a great contrast. We think the same way, but we certainly have contrasting styles, and I actually think that's really important on a coaching staff at the college level is try to find like minds, contrasting styles, so that you can really sort of adapt and tailor your approach to kind of every player, and I think we've been able to do that nicely, certainly as long as Chris has been with the program.
Very good. And I got to ask, are you able to attract fans out there to your dual matches, Coach?
We are. We're very fortunate. For anybody who's been to our facility, it's one of the nicest facilities in all of collegiate tennis at any level. 12 courts, all with permanent seating, all with state-of-the-art lighting. Really a spectacular facility. And on a college campus, I think the more matches that you can schedule at night when the kids aren't in class or aren't sleeping, the more fans you're going to get. And that's been our success. Our biggest matches we try to put either late afternoon or early evening, and that's when we'll attract some big crowds. And we've been fortunate enough to host NCAAs about every 3 to 4 years, and when we do that, we really pack the place out. So it's an electric environment and a really fun place to play, coach, and spectate.
Coach, how long after you won that national championship did you get to enjoy it and before you moved on to the next season?
I would say I'm still enjoying it. I'm savoring every moment because I know how difficult it was to achieve, and I'm encouraging my players to continue to savor it as well. So it'll be an ongoing celebration. We're still working on in a lot of other different areas, but we're definitely savoring it. And we're not only savoring it as a college men's tennis team, but also as a department. It was our first national championship of any sort in 34 years. For our athletic department, and the first one since tennis won back in 1981. So it was really a special moment for our whole community.
Coach, you only lose the two players from this year's team. Is there a good chance that you could repeat next year?
It's a tall task. The parity at the Division III level just continues to get tougher and tougher and tougher. To repeat would be incredible, and we've got some fine players, but there are a lot of great teams out there and a lot of teams that are tired of losing to us and are as hungry as ever. So it'll be a fun challenge. I'll put it that way.
Well, very good. Well, I appreciate you coming in today, Paul, so we could talk about Claremont Mud Scripts and get that situated in my mind as to think out there. So it seems like you guys always have kind of an unfair advantage over everybody else. You got three schools.
You know what? It's a nice position to be in, but you got to remember, it's about the total number of students that you're pulling from, and our number at around 2,500, 3,000 is I think pretty typical on the D3 level. Most of the institutions you see some of the bigger sort of state schools with much higher numbers. In their student bodies. Ours is pretty typical compared to other small liberal arts colleges.
Well, very good, Paul. Thanks for coming in today, and I want to wish you the best of luck in the future.
All right, Jason. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's it, Coach Paul Settles. Paul is the men's Division III national champion. He and his team won it this year after making several final appearances, two straight. This made it three straight, and they finally won in 2015. Just an unbelievable match-winning streak out there, and seems like they're doing a lot of good things, and want to encourage you to check them out and see what that program's about, because they're doing good things over there. Now, I want to remind you, next week we've got Armstrong State's Sean McCaffrey coming in. Sean and his team won the NAIA National Championship, and we look forward to visiting with him next week. If you can, get out there and hit some tennis balls today, and if you can't hit them, at least think about hitting them. So thanks so much for what you've done, and listen to us again next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.